Welcome to the Advisor Pact Monthly Session. This is Mark Little. You know, delivering truly comprehensive financial services, but at a level that is high enough to actually impress your clients, to actually increase the number of referrals that you received from your well-served clients. Well, that's not easy, but you can do it. Every month we come together, we address your questions. Together we're going to show you how to do this. Now, this is your opportunity each month to address anything, obstacles, bottlenecks, anything that stands in the way of you and delivering truly comprehensive financial services. It's easy to submit questions to us. Just email your question. If we receive your question within 24 hours before the monthly session, then we'll consider your question for inclusion in our monthly session. I'd like to show you the questions that we're going to be addressing today, and just look these over. If when you go back to the replay page for this session, if there's one of these issues that we discuss that you'd like to listen to again, you can just look on the player, click on the question, and the player will jump directly to the question you want to replay. Well, let's jump right in. The first question I selected for this month that I thought would be appropriate for the majority of you who are attempting to implement truly comprehensive financial services is a question regarding the three-meeting process. We had an advisor reach out to us this month and with some confusion about the three-meeting process. And the confusion or question is, where does the ideal client acquisition process end and the ideal client service process begin within the three-meeting process? Are the first few meetings designed to acquire clients? The answer is no. Everything we talk about in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, including the three-meeting process, is all about delivering truly comprehensive financial services after a client has said yes. So the initiation of the three-meeting process is after you've invited a potential client into your ideal client community. They've raised their hand and said, yes, I'd like to join your ideal client community. I'd like to receive truly comprehensive financial services. And at that point, the three-meeting process commences. None of what you're seeing here in the three-meeting process is designed to be implemented by you and your team before a client becomes a client. So you're responsible for the client acquisition process. We assume that you have a process for going out and identifying potential ideal clients. We assume that you know how to interact with potential ideal clients and that you've got some client acquisition process. Client acquisition is beyond the scope of what we're dealing with here in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program. What we're dealing with in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program is kind of flipping the whole process upside down. The premise of this program is if you want to get more referrals, you need to become more referable, which means you need to be delivering client value that is so remarkable that every single one of your clients will remark about you. It'll make your quote-unquote marketing or client acquisition efforts substantially easier because your clients are the ones who will be talking you up. And this is not a sales and marketing training program. There are so many of those out in our industry. And as a matter of fact, I think those programs, to a great extent, do a tremendous disservice to advisors, because what a sales and marketing training course is doing is it's training you in the words to say and the promises to make and the interactions to have with potential clients to, in essence, convert them to clients. But there is no effort given or very little effort given in our industry as to how to deliver on those promises in such a way that the clients are so impressed that they would not allow anyone that they know or that they love or that they care about to go deal with or talk to any other financial advisor other than you. So the emphasis in most programs is on the sales process, the scripting, the what do you say, the objection handling, and so forth. This program, what makes this program different is it moves you and your team, and we do help you build and lead your team, to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, not in just some superficial way that you can describe to potential clients and see if you can grow your business just by simply making promises about what we're talking about. No, we deal with the other end of it. We deal with how do you actually deliver on the promises of truly comprehensive financial services, and how do you deliver on that in such a way that you become indispensable to your clients, and your clients wouldn't allow anyone they care about to deal with anyone about their money other than you. So all that you see in our program, including this 3-meeting process, is focused upon after a client has been invited to become a client, they've raised their hand, they've said, yes, I want to become a client, and then the 3-meeting process begins. We do have the initial client interview in the 3-meeting process, but we provide no content for that. That is your meeting to meet with clients and describe the process and the promises that you're going to make. Everything that we're dealing with here in this program, it's in that initial client interview that you describe the value that you're going to provide, and that's what we deal with here in the program. How you do that is entirely up to you, and we assume that you have your own client acquisition process. So once you've acquired a client, the 3-meeting process is laid out like this. You have the first 3 meetings, the initial client interview, the implementation meeting 2 weeks later, and then the initial progress update meeting. This is the first 59 days. These are one-time meetings with every client. Once a client becomes a client, you'll have these 3 meetings just one time in every client relationship. And then after the first 59 days, And internally, this is after your team has created a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy for this client that everybody on the team can be held accountable to, then you as the advisor release your client into the routine 3-meeting process. These are 3 annually recurring meetings occurring once every 4 months. So we discuss this in depth in episode number 4 of the Advisor Pack monthly session. So if you want to have a much deeper discussion and better understanding of the 3-meeting process and exactly what you do at each stage, then you need to go back and listen to episode number 4 of the Advisor Pack monthly. But to address the question that you submitted for today's session, this 3-meeting process begins after your client agrees to join your ideal client community. So yes, we're showing an initial client interview as meeting number 1, but in the case of this advisor I was speaking with this week, then if it may be that that initial client interview is multiple interviews. So this was my case. Before I met Bill Bachrach in the year 1999, I had a multiple meeting process. I had a process. It was actually a 3-meeting process, but before the client became a client. So I would have several meetings focused around rapport building and so forth. And at some point, the client would bring in the documents. And then at some point in the process, usually in the 3rd meeting, the client would become a client. Well, if that's your process, then all 3 of those meetings happen prior to this 3-meeting process. So whereas here on the 3-meeting process graphic, we'd call it the initial client interview. Well, in that case, it would be the initial 3 client interviews. So, and just to make a fine point on this, and then we'll move on to the next question, I felt that my process was brutal. This was back in the 90s, and I was meeting with clients. It was very effective, by the way. I was very successful at bringing in business and bringing in clients. As a matter of fact, I had 1,242 clients. And I had built that client base up over a 12-year period. The problem is it was brutal on them. it was a meeting with clients, with potential clients, between an hour and two-hour meeting each, three meetings, and then we would make the decision whether it was a good fit to work together or not. Well, I found that to be brutal, and I met Bill Bachrach. As a matter of fact, I was a number one producer at my nationwide broker-dealer firm. We had our national conference in June of 1999. Bill Bachrach was the keynote speaker. That was the first time I'd ever... Not only the first time I ever laid eyes on Bill Bachrach, but it was the first time I'd ever heard of Bill Bachrach or had heard of values-based financial planning. So I'm going to talk about values-based financial planning in a minute, but suffice to say this, what appealed to me, among other things, about Bill Bachrach's method was that he said that his process, and that would be the financial roadmap process, that his process shortened that whole client acquisition process from, in my case, three meetings to one. That his promise was that with his methodology, and that being the financial roadmap, that clients who were a good fit for working together would actually agree to bring in all their documents to the initial client interview. And there in the first meeting, there would be a decision made right then and there in about an hour's time, whether the client would be a good fit for the ideal client community, and a joint decision would be made for me to invite them into the ideal client community and for them to accept. So to me, that was very appealing. Shortcutting this whole process, and rather than meeting with the client three times before they became a client, rather to meet with the client one time and get all of that done, to have a compelling initial client interview, so compelling that the potential client had all the information needed to make a decision to move forward. And they did. And that's what I perfected. I became the poster child for values-based financial planning back in the early 2000s. And so I would encourage you, if you don't have a solid, compelling client acquisition process, I would encourage you to contact Bill Bachrach at Bachrach & Associates and to investigate learning more about the financial roadmap and values-based financial planning, because we assume you have a client acquisition process already in place. You know how to go meet people, you know how to interact with people, and grow your business. What we're talking about here is creating value on the other end that is so compelling that the clients that you do have cannot resist sharing how indispensable you are with everyone that they know. This creates a confidence in you that you're not just all talk, that you are creating value at such a level that as you interact with potential ideal clients, you have the confidence to describe a level of value that you know is probably a financial services monopoly in your community. But that's the answer to your question is that the three-meeting process occurs after your client agrees to join your ideal client community. So next question. Okay, so this is an advisor in the United States. This advisor says that I usually ask a potential client for $1,000 to complete their financial plan, and then I use creating a simple financial plan to then identify investment and insurance revenue opportunities. And what's not being said here is opportunities for the advisor. So does this seem like a good client acquisition process? I'm juggling my instinct to just lay it out there and say what I candidly think about this, or tiptoe around and be brutally diplomatic. That didn't come out right. So let me just, when time is of the essence, just be brutally honest. I would say no. This is not a good process. This sounds like something like there are many variations on what I would describe as the traditional financial services model. It's a sales process, and I'm not a fan of offering vague deliverables for low amounts of money. I don't see how this moves you as an advisor forward in your business. It's not a very good business model, and I don't see how it helps clients accomplish to actualize what really matters most to them financially in their life, which generally requires coaching and a process of a trusted financial advisor disciplining both the team and the client, all the people involved in helping the client actualize their financial goals. It's really a big job of accountability over time to make sure things stay on track. So let me just kind of walk through the logic path the way I view this. I do not believe what you're describing is a good process. I think a small fee with a vague outcome is not a compelling offer. The idea of getting a client, I understand that a client is more likely to say yes if you tell them that the process begins with a $1,000 financial plan as opposed to a $10,000 financial plan. So I get that. A smaller amount of money is easier to say yes to. But this whole notion, that being aside for just a moment, you know, just putting aside the amount that you charge to get the ball rolling with a client, I think having a vague outcome is an uncompelling offer, which is to say, let's just get started with $1,000, and then once we get into your financial affairs, then we'll be able to see better what is going on and what to recommend. I don't think this is the most compelling offer. I think clients who are not serious about their goals are not good clients. So I'll throw that out there as a premise, that clients who are serious about their financial future are willing and understand that if they're going to work with a professional like you, that is going to require an investment, and that may not be a small investment. And it's kind of like a year ago, I had a heart attack. And I can tell you that after you have a heart attack and you start shopping around for a cardiologist to advise you on how to stay alive going forward, the first question I am not asking is, who's the cheapest guy in town? I'm looking for skill. I'm looking for someone that is really good at what they do. And intuitively, you just know that somebody who's really good at what they do is not going to be the cheapest guy in town. So, and I say guy lovingly, in our industry, it's men and women in our industry. It's when I say the cheapest guy in town, I mean the cheapest person in town is not what's in the foremost in the mind of a potential ideal client. And that is to say, a client who meets the profile of someone who's very serious about work accomplishing their financial objectives. So I don't believe a small fee with a vague outcome is compelling. And by the way, we did discuss what you should charge and some of what we're going to talk about here in just a second. We did discuss some of this in episode number 5 of the Advisor Pack monthly session. So I would encourage you for a more thorough discussion on what you should charge as a financial advisor for truly comprehensive financial services. Go back to episode number 5 and listen to that discussion. But in that session, here are some of the highlights that I want to address your issue today, based on some of the things we talked about in episode number 5. First of all, I'm going to throw it out there. This is something that's very tough for financial advisors to accept. But it is true, and I can validate this not only with other advisors we've worked with since 2002, but by my own story. I can tell you that in 1999, when I made the decision not to accept non-ideal clients going forward, that was a decision that actually accelerated my results. So now I realize that in our industry, we are not trained not to accept money. I wasn't trained. I worked for a Wall Street-based firm back in the late 80s, 1987 and 1988. And I can tell you, I was not trained that when a potential client has money to in any way turn that money away. As a matter of fact, I was trained, and all of us are trained, the opposite way. If there's any way we can see to deploy that money in a way that benefits the client and benefits us as the advisor, you know, that's what we were trained to do. What I decided after 1999, and I established an ideal client profile, which is the starting point, and we have sessions. You can search the Advisor Pack monthly sessions. We've discussed establishing an ideal client profile as being critical to this whole process and how to do that. But once I had identified my ideal client profile, the decision, you know, you're at a fork in the road at that point. You can basically describe that ideal client profile as kind of a wish list, as in, you know, this is the kind of client that we serve best, and this is what we hope to find. But we'll work with other clients who meet different profiles, but this is the profile of the client that we serve the best. Well, that's one fork in the road. That's one decision that you could make. For me, I really did soul searching on this, and I thought, how much more compelling would it be to look a potential client in the eye and say, this is the profile of the client that we serve the best, and I have made a decision only to accept clients who meet this profile. So I'm going to come back here in a minute and tell you it's okay to accept survival clients if that's what you decide to do, but I would not be doing you any favors, and I would not be doing your ideal potential future ideal clients any favors if I don't tell it like it is. And telling it like it is if you have enough margin in your life, if you're living within your means and you can afford to live on what, you know, if you can afford the time that it will take to build a community of ideal clients with recurring revenue that will support you for the rest of your life, then you will build that community of clients quicker if you will agree not to accept non-ideal clients along the way. Non-ideal clients, whether you accept this or not, are the biggest distraction that and the biggest obstacle to your creating your community of ideal clients that you're delivering truly comprehensive financial services to. So it took me from the moment that I decided not to accept non-ideal clients and that I would only accept ideal clients, that was in January of the year 2000. This is Y2K. As the clock rolled from 1999 in the last century into the new millennium, January 1st of the year 2000, I made a decision that I would only be accepting ideal clients at that point. I only had 17 ideal clients. After 12 years of being in this business and having 1,242 clients, when I applied the ideal client profile to that 1,242 names of families that I was serving, only 17 met the ideal client profile. I sat down with each of those 17. I explained the old way that I did business, and I described the new way that I was doing business. I invited all 17 of them into my ideal client community, and they began receiving truly comprehensive financial services from that day forward. And those 17 ideal clients referred me more or less to every other client that I acquired, and that was 100. I acquired 100 ideal clients. Many of you who know my story, after I acquired 100 ideal clients, I immediately began disengaging from clients who it was clear to me did not meet the ideal client profile, but said they did and wished they could. They just weren't financial delegators and they wanted to be, but they just couldn't pull it off. So I disengaged from 9 individuals pretty much right away after I built my ideal client community. And so I ended up having, after, you know, the cleansing, I had 91 ideal clients. And so I believe, so that was 34 months. That took from January of 2000 to October of 2002. And that at least as far as our records are concerned, that beats the land speed record for building an ideal client community. No advisor that I've ever worked with since then, you know, we started working with other financial advisors, coaching you through all of this, starting at the end of 2002. So, and as many of you know, I work with Bill Bachrach. Every advisor who works with Bill Bachrach and his committed advisor program, that's really the program for the best financial advisors in the world and those who aspire to be. You know, Bill is working with top financial advisors all over the world, and every financial advisor in Bill's program works with me. My system, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, everything that you're being presented with here, we present and we work with all the advisors who are working with Bill Bachrach. The only reason that I bring all this up is no advisor that I've ever worked with independently, no advisor that has gone through any of Bill Bachrach's programs has ever accomplished what I'm talking about here as quickly as I did. 34 months, 100 ideal clients. So starting with 17. So I'm just telling you like it is. If you can soul search, sit down with your spouse, sit down with the people that you care about in your life, talk about what it's going to take to, even if it requires substantial tightening of your belt to live on modest means for at least the next 2 to 3 years, however long it takes you to build your community of ideal clients, you will never look back. That is the fastest path to building your community of ideal clients. If you make the decision to do this, you'll never look back. That being said, it's okay to take a survival clients. Many of you come up with kind of a modified approach to what I just said. You're willing to accept that you would grow your community of clients quicker if you did not have the distraction of non-ideal clients, but you make the decision that you need survival income from survival clients, in other words, non-ideal clients, to keep your business going and to make this work. That is actually fine. However, there are some ground rules. There's some things that work and some things that don't work. If you accept survival clients, as we've talked about before, you don't want to have a low-end financial services offering with vague outcomes. That what works, and I would say the only thing that works, is having clearly defined what I would describe as starkly contrasted service offerings. So it's very clear to non-ideal clients what the service level differential is between what they're going to receive as a non-ideal client and what an ideal client will receive, which should be at a substantially higher level of service. Now, why am I making such a big deal out of this? Because of the tendency I've noticed over the last 10 years for financial advisors to create multiple options for ways that clients could work with them, to have multiple ways that a client could work with an advisor. And some of those ways look suspiciously like ideal client light. In other words, it's very easy to create a level of service that when the client looks at it, they say, okay, I'll take that. It's less money and I can start working with you today. And frankly, and this is the client thinking, the potential client, they're thinking, I don't really see much, if any, difference between that lower level of service that you're describing as a way that I could work with you and the ideal client service. I don't see the differential. I don't see that they are starkly contrasted. I don't see that I'm going to be getting substantially less service or value from this other lower service offering. And so inadvertently, advisors tend to create levels of service which confuse the client into thinking they're getting very close, if not almost identical service to ideal client service, rather than what you should be doing as an advisor, which is creating starkly contrasted level of service where a client looks at it and says, okay, I see the options. There's this one over here, which is substantially less service, and there's one over here, which is substantially greater value, and it's clear to me that the incentive to become an ideal client. So I may not be an ideal client today. If you're accepting a survival client, then the client might say, okay, I'm happy to work with you on this lower level of service, but I definitely see the differential. I see the value of if and when I become able to do it and meet your ideal client profile, I would love to move into the ideal client community because it is obviously so much better. Okay? So, and why do I say two clearly defined, starkly contrasted service offerings? It's because we've tested this. If an advisor has three, and trust me, I've seen advisors that have, it's on a grid, like based on the client size or various things, it's like a table where there are 8 or 9 or 10 options of ways that a client could work with an advisor. Makes perfect sense to the advisor. Advisors are typically analytical. They're trying to come up with ways to work with clients on different, I guess, sliding scales or different levels of service and whatnot. And it's very clear to the advisor. But when a client looks at this and there's, you know, even three offerings, option A and option B and option C, we've done testing on this. If you have three offerings versus two offerings, an advisor with just two clearly defined, starkly contrasted offerings will hear yes more often, even at high levels of price, than an advisor with three offerings. And there is human brain chemistry behind this. Three is harder to make a decision between. This is a client who says, that's very interesting. Let me think about that after seeing all three options. Versus two, I've only got two things for you, option A and option B. Then the client sees the starkly contrasted value. You as an advisor are going to only invite the client into which of the two options that is a good fit, that fits their profile. So you're only going to recommend of the two options which is more appropriate. But of the two options, the client sees the clear benefit of option A over option B, and an advisor with just two options will hear yes substantially more, that like more than twice as often as an advisor who has three options. So forget three and four, and forget four and five and six and ten options. You need to get your options down to a clearly defined, starkly contrasted option A and option B, and make it clear to a client who accepts option B the advantages of option A, so that they can clearly see if and when they ever become candidate for ideal client service, they would certainly want to make the leap and join the ideal client community because it is so much better. Now, we talk about this in episode 5, as I talked about, so let me just run through option A and option B. So option A sounds like this. For a potential client that meets your ideal client profile, your promise, your offering, my team and I will provide oversight by coordinating all your personal financial affairs. We're going to make course corrections to keep you on track, and we're going to help you make smart choices about your money along the way. For my team to provide oversight and to help you make these decisions for all the way along the path in your financial future, that is $50,000 per year. It's clean, it's simple, it's easy to understand, the value is there. This clearly describes option A. Option B is a comprehensive, if we're not going to go with option A, then option B is the only other way to work with me is to begin as we would in option A. It's just that, and we do this with every family that we work with, we're going to start by creating a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. We're going to document exactly what it's going to take to actualize all the financial objectives that you've shared with us. It costs $10,000. That's a one-time fee. And you take this strategy that we will create for you and you go implement it. So the key here is there are no future entanglements. Your option A is an ongoing relationship with an ideal client. Your option B is a one-time transaction with a survival client. Now, let's talk about, you know, the question that I always get is the follow-up with this, you know, if I agree as an advisor not to, you know, seek out the low-hanging fruit, go out and find clients where I could do transaction business, sell them an investment, sell them some insurance. If I agree to stop doing that and start doing this, that I've got a clearly defined option A and an option B. If the option B is what they select, and then as I'm going through their financial effects and I am seeing opportunities that would help them, some changes that need to be made in their financial affairs that, you know, you could sell them a financial product or sell them a financial service or a life insurance product of some sort. If you stumble across something as you're doing their financial plan that would help them, that's perfectly fine. That, again, is survival income. What all I'm saying is that look for that business. Basically, simplify your approach. Only work with people who are serious about their financial future and willing and understand the benefit of establishing a written financial plan, and do that with clients. And then as you're doing their financial plan, if you then come across opportunities that would help their situation, that would be investment or insurance products or services, then yes, recommend them. But don't recommend services that lead to future entanglements. So, for example, if they have small amounts of money, $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, even $1 million, if they're not an ideal client and they're not going to continue working with you, then don't be tempted to bring them into a percentage of assets under management fee structure where you're going to be obligated to meet with them on an ongoing basis in future years. Better to just look for products and services that are a one-time transaction. You help them create their comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, and you do that, you hand it over to them to implement. There are no future entanglements and no promises of future meetings. That's not to say that you can't follow up with them every 6 months to a year if you feel like they are evolving into an ideal client. There's nothing that prevents you from following up. I am simply telling you that it is smarter not to create future entanglements created by the products and services that you sell. That will create the least amount of friction in terms of your building your ideal client community. Now, advisors also get hang up on these amounts, $50,000 on an ongoing basis for an ideal client, $10,000 for a financial plan. Don't get hung up on that, but do get this point that that you want to work with non-ideal clients who are, number one, profitable. In other words, the arrangement is a good deal for both parties. It's a good deal for them, and it's a good deal for you. It's a good deal for them because the value you're providing is going to exceed the cost to them. And it's a good deal for you because it's a profitable business. And so therefore, if it's a confidence issue, and I talk about this quite a bit in episode number 5. So if your confidence level is not that you can, that you feel confident to offer an ideal client service offering, an ongoing relationship with an ideal client for $50,000 per year, well, then cut it in half, make it $25,000 per year. And if you're not comfortable charging $10,000 for a financial plan, then cut it in half, charge $5,000, but don't charge less than that. This is, as many of you know, and what we share with you here in the Advisor Pack program is as we develop things for our flagship service, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. These are advisors who are paying a minimum of $1,000 a month to work with us to actually implement truly comprehensive financial services through our system. Over half of the advisors utilizing the Trusted Advisor Toolkit are charging their clients a minimum of $25,000 per year. So that means half are charging more. And every year, the percentage of clients who are charging less than 25% is not only diminishing, but tightening closer to 25,000. So that means that of the clients that are charging 25,000 or less, 80% of those are charging between 20 and 25,000. So we're making progress. The point is that a client who is serious enough about their financial future to pay $5,000 or $10,000 for a financial plan, these are the people that you probably do want to follow up with, at least until you complete your ideal client community and you're no longer accepting clients. So two starkly defined, clearly defined, starkly contrasted services, option A, option B, don't offer an option C. And then if you work with a client in option B and you stumble across some transaction business you think would benefit them, then that's quite all right. And third, if you decide which is the most appropriate option, if any, and you add ideal, you add clients by invitation only. So it's not as though you give the client a menu of options that we've got option A and we've got option B. No, you, by going through your client acquisition, process, the purpose of that process is to determine fit. You're not trying to sell or tell them, you're not all talk. What you're trying to do, once you have this simple, clearly defined two levels of service, you are simply trying to establish in your client acquisition process, which of these two does this family that you're in front of fit, if anything. If they don't, then just point them in the right direction and feel good doing it. If they meet one of your two options, option A or option B, then you propose one of them and tell them why. You know, my basis for recommending option A is this. I notice you're very serious about your goals. I notice that you're passionate about your values if you're doing a financial roadmap with the client and so forth. So in any event, you decide which of the options is appropriate for a potential client, if any, and then you add clients by invitation only. I think the key here is, and it's a challenge for most financial advisors because most of us were not trained initially to be this way, you enter meetings with potential clients ambivalent as to the outcome. All you're trying to establish is fit. You're trying to assess this client, this potential client, their situation, their circumstances, what they're trying to accomplish, and whether you can help, and you determine whether your option A or your option B is a good fit. And if it is, you recommend the option that fits them. If option B is the one that fits, then you're perfectly within your rights after they accept the offer to lay out option A. I think it's actually an obligation on your part to explain to every client that, look, my goal is to only work with ideal clients at some point in our business's future, and to lay out your ideal client profile and explain what the offering is and let everybody in your firm, especially the non-ideal clients, know that there will be a day in the future when, you know, there will be a decision made to only work with ideal clients. And if they choose option B and you create a financial plan for them, hand it over to them at the end after 90 days or, you know, 120 days, however long it takes to get the financial plan completed at a, you know, that's worth $5,000 or $10,000, then agree that, you know, you'll keep in touch. It's up to them to implement. You have no future entanglements, but it's only smart business sense for you to keep up with clients that are that serious about their financial goals and you feel like are kind of cultivating themselves into becoming ideal clients. I think this is the hope with any non-ideal client, isn't it? The only reason that you're working with them is that you feel someday they could become an ideal client. Something's going to happen in their life that will make them an ideal client. Maybe they sell their business. Maybe they retire from their corporation with a big payout, whatever it is, something short of just winning the lottery. The whole idea of accepting a non-ideal client should be that there's a potential for them some point in the future to become an ideal client. So don't accept non-ideal clients with future entanglements. Clean yourself of that distraction and then increase the probability that you'll establish your community of ideal clients as quickly as possible. Okay, so we got this last final question. It was funny. It kind of struck me funny. The question came in, when I meet people. Now, this is from an advisor, a financial advisor, who says, when I meet people casually and I introduce myself as a financial advisor, they smile, they nod politely, and then they run from the room like they're escaping from a burning building. Why do people seem to dislike financial advisors, and what should I do about it? I have seen this happen, actually. I have actually seen when I in my days volunteering with the Chamber of Commerce, chambers of commerce all over the world have a disproportionately high number of financial advisors who join the Chamber of Commerce with the hopes of meeting wealthy people, potential clients. And I have been in mixers with financial advisors where this exact scenario unfolds. A financial advisor goes up to someone, they start chatting with them, the person's chatting, they're chatting about this and that, and then at some point, the individual asks the advisor, so what do you do for a living? And then the financial advisor says whatever they're going to say, something that I'm sure they have carefully crafted back at the office as being their unique selling proposition, whatever it is. You know, we help people achieve their goals and dreams, whatever. We help people achieve their goals and accomplish their dreams so that they can live the life they've always wanted. Anyway, then only to watch the person smile, say, oh, that's nice, and then look over the shoulder of the advisor at the next person that they want to talk to, and they go very quickly move on. So why do people do this? I think even though I had a successful business, very successful financial advisory business, working with families, retail financial business. I got into the business in 1987. And by the year 1999, so from 87 to 99, 12 years, I had built quite a business, very successful business. I was number one producer, commission producer in my I spent the first 2 years working for a Wall Street-based firm, and then I went quote-unquote independent with a broker-dealer I started off very slow, but at some point, very quickly, within the first 5 years in the business, I became the number one producer at this national firm. And so, but I was an independent, and I had a horrible business model. I was working 80 to 90 hours a week. I had 1,242 clients. I was ready to leave the business. I was sick of the business. I was not able to meet with my clients even once on an annual basis. I just had too many clients. I couldn't meet with them. And so then I met Bill Bachrach. Bill Bachrach developed values-based financial planning. This is a copy of his book, Values-Based Financial Planning. I encourage all of you to read it. I very, very seldom, almost never encourage you to read books. If I reference a book like I am about to here in a minute or two, I usually just pluck the important information out of it and tell you all you need to know, because I understand the risk of reading books. You go in and read books, and then there's a tendency on the part of financial advisors, now you're off on another track and you're trying to implement what the book is saying. That is not productive. This book, however, could change your business model, as it did my business model, in a way that will get you focused on what you're trying to accomplish. And because I implemented values-based financial planning, and everything that I'm sharing with you today, including those of you that are attempting, you know, you're on the waiting list to join the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, I can tell you that everything in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, everything that I present and share in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, is consistent with values-based financial planning, because it was around Bill Bachrach's values-based financial planning that I created Truly Comprehensive Financial Services to deliver on the promises of values-based financial planning. So that being the case, it's up to you entirely. Listen, if you have a great client acquisition process, far be it from me to steer you in a different direction. I guess my point is, to the point of this question, that this book describes a better model. And it is actually a book written for the retail client. So this was a book written by Bill Bachrach directly to consumers about values-based, how to create your financial planning or your financial affairs around your values. And that was upside down. So my vision of working with a client, I will call this the traditional model. I had already begun in the late 90s creating financial plans for clients. I recognized the value of a client having an overarching plan. Without a plan, it was clear to me there was no strategy. There was no accountability. You could not hold anybody accountable to an amorphous idea. So the idea of creating a plan was very intuitive to me, and I implemented the traditional model from our industry that the way you do this is you sit down with a client who establishes goals. So the client sets the goals, and then you sit down and then create a financial plan to accomplish those goals. It was a simple model. Set the goals, create the financial plan to accomplish the goals. What values-based financial planning did to kind of turn that upside down is adding one component to this process, and that is the why behind the goal. So values-based financial planning does not start with a client setting goals. Values-based financial planning starts with having a client establish their values. Now, values are something that you don't really establish. This is something that is the way that you're wired. This is the why behind the goals. These are the things in your life that are more important than money, things that drive your behavior, whether you know it or not. This is how you're wired. These are your values. This is what really matters most to you in life. So values-based financial planning outlined a process that started with the values. You sit down with a client sharing their values, and then you set the goals, and then you create the financial plan. And what it does is it looks like a very simple reordering of the process, but by starting with a compelling conversation, establishing values first, the client is able to do something that they have never done before. If they've done it before, they didn't recognize it, and it's this process in values-based financial planning that helps clients make the connections between their values and their goals. And this is what's really magic about this. And the premise is, and it's described, it's a quote in the book, Bill Bachrach quotes this quote, "When your values are clear, your decisions are easy." And that's a quote by Roy Disney, who's Walt's brother, from many moons ago. And so the premise is, once you just establish your values and you're clear on that, then you make the connection as to why you're accomplishing these goals. So it's the why behind the goals. And so this was very important in my thinking process. This really changed everything for me. It changed the conversations that I had with clients. It changed the way I decided, you know, this is, you know, what we need to deliver to clients to help them accomplish their goals so that they can experience and live their values. Everything about our business became clear to me as I implemented this method, helping clients become clear about how their values connect with their goals. So this was transformational for me. And I built everything that we talk about on this premise. Now, I'm coming around. Stick with me here. The question is, why do clients run from the room when financial advisors identify themselves as a financial advisor? So I'm starting with that I think the business model is messed up. I think values-based financial planning is hitting on a key in human brain chemistry, that people do things for their own reasons. If they set their goals first and they don't make the connection with their values, then they're not as motivated to move forward. And that people make decisions and move forward for their own reasons. There's no amount of sales training and manipulation. There's no amount of objection handling or sales scripting that you can do to move a client, to persuade a client to take action if they're not clear on why they want to do it for their own reasons. So by starting with the values, it became clear to me this is in alignment with human behavior, human brain chemistry, helping clients establish the link between their goals and what matters most to them in life helps me as an advisor help the client move forward. Okay? So then there was a book after I had actually built my whole business, established all of this around Bill Bachrach's methodology. I started seeing there was evidence that coming out about the brain chemistry, about why this works. And so there were many books that I read. I'm going to share two with you. Do not go read these books. It's not necessary. It will send you off on a path of distraction. But I will tell you the premise here that matters to you. It was a book that came out 5 years ago, which more or less described what I did, but why it worked. And it was called Start With Why. And it was a book by Simon Sinek about how great leaders inspire people to take action. Okay, so it's all about inspiring people to move forward. And what he points out in his book is that the traditional model, this is to say the traditional approach of a business describing what they do, they start with the what we do. So Simon Sinek says every business in the world can tell you what they do. They can tell you the mechanics of, you know, they know why they're in business. They know what they're doing. They know what business they're in. And then in the conversation, they might move to how they do it. That's what we called the unique selling proposition or the proprietary way of doing business. You know, business owners love to describe the how they do what they do. And this is, you know, what the conversation is typically about. And if at all, and oftentimes business owners don't go here, but, you know, there is maybe a wrap up at the end as to why we do this. Okay. So it's the what, the how, and the why. And so he makes a point in the book that inspiring leaders actually flip this, that he's been studying this for years. And what he noticed about the most inspiring leaders is they flip the whole equation. They flip the whole conversation. They flip this whole process upside down. They start with the why in the conversation. They move to the how, and then the what is more or less an outcome of the why and the how. So he makes the point that inspiring leaders connect with people, and that people connect on more with the why than the how and the what. So let me give you an example here. I'll give you an example that he uses in the book, just so you're not tempted to go buy the book. He uses an example of Apple Computer. And he points out that, especially when Steve Jobs was alive, Apple had this kind of amazing ability to come out with just revolutionary products that when they came to market, they just changed everything in the landscape. And so how was a company like Apple more transformational than other companies in the business, like Dell Computer and other computer companies? Because on the face of it, Apple is just a computer company. So if under the traditional model, you know, if you're kind of going back through this, how Apple would have described themselves if they were describing themselves in a traditional way of describing a business, they would describe the what first. They would say, we make computers. We are a company that makes computers. How we do it is we make computers that are beautifully designed and easy to use. So that's how we do it. And so if you're looking for a computer that's different and beautifully designed and simple to use, then buy one of ours. If they get to the why at all, that would be the traditional approach in business to describing the business. So, you know, somebody comes up at a cocktail party, says, so what do you do? That would be the traditional approach in business, the what, the how, and the why. What Apple did is they did it different. They flip it. What Steve Jobs used to describe Apple as is, he would say, at Apple Computer, everything we do, everything we believe in is designed to challenge the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. That's the why. He would say that the way we do this is, the way we change the status quo is by making our computers beautifully designed and easy to use. And as a result, we make computers that people want to buy. And would you like to buy one? So it's the flipping of this whole conversation that is critical here. So I'm going to show you how this happens in our industry and basically how to fix this in just a minute. But let me just stop and pause and tell you another book. And the only reason I'm telling you this book, again, don't go read this book. But this is a book that came out, I think it was 2002, if I'm not mistaken. It was many, many years ago. I read this book, and it was by a psychologist, Dan Baker, who worked with a lot of people who were struggling with crisis in their lives. And what he is part of a movement in science that's called the science of happiness. And so it's becoming an emerging science where scientists are studying the brain and what makes people happy and how the brain works. And there are some things that are consistent in the brain with people who are happy. And so there are conversations that you can have with people that are designed to make them happy. And so he goes through the brain chemistry on this. And the reason I bring up this book is because whenever this book came out, I read it and I began giving this book to my clients. So you think in terms of acquiring an ideal client and you're sending them a welcome kit and you don't want to send them, you know, a silly newsletter about market performance and, you know, you don't want to send them what my friend John Bowen calls financial pornography. So you're not going to give them a subscription to Money Magazine or something that focuses on money, because after all, through Truly Comprehensive Financial Services, that's what they're hiring you to do. They're hiring you because they have things in their life more important than money, and they don't want to have to do all this. So I started sending clients, rather than anything on finance, I would send them this book, What Happy People Know. And I just would give it as a gift. But one of the things that he talks about in this book is the limbic system. So the limbic system is primarily the hypothalamus, the amygdala, and the hippocampus. But this limbic system is the early brain. This was the early brain in early humans, and this is the part of the brain that that controls feelings. It controls trust. The limbic brain controls loyalty. This limbic brain, these components of the limbic brain, are responsible for all human behavior. And this part of the brain is responsible for all decision making. And this part of the brain has no capacity for language. So when you're in this cocktail party and you're chatting with somebody and they say, so what do you do for a living? Whatever the words you say, that language, the words that you use, are not being consumed by the limbic brain. They're being consumed by the new brain, the part of the brain that makes humans unique. It's called the neocortex. This is the reasoning part of the brain. This is where we have logic and we think things through, and it makes us uniquely human. The neocortex, which is not the limbic system, wants to process facts and figures. And so it goes to this whole issue of, have you ever noticed when you give someone all the facts and figures, they say something, sometimes they'll say something like, yeah, that's all the facts and figures, that looks good, everything seems in line, but you know, somehow it just doesn't feel right. Have you ever heard that, or have you ever said that yourself? So isn't that interesting? Why do we say feel? Why do we use that verb, feel, when we're presented with facts and figures? Well, it's because it's the limbic system, the feeling part of your brain, that takes over whenever you're making. This is responsible for all decision making. It has to do with the feelings. So you have to understand before you come and approach this issue, and it's a very complicated issue, but you can simplify it. What do I say when somebody says, so what do you do for a living? What you have to understand and the way that the brain works is, first of all, whatever you do and whatever you say in any interaction with a human, people, and that is to say people on the other side, people that you're interacting with, people do things for their own reasons. They don't do anything for your reasons. If they do, maybe it's because they're your parents or your children, people that love you. And even then, I would contend that people still prefer to do things for their own reasons. And certainly, anybody that you're interacting with in a business setting, they are listening to what you're saying, but they are employing their limbic system, their feelings, responsible for trust and human behavior and all of that, and they're basically ignoring the words, and they're getting a feeling for what you're saying, and they're determining is what you're communicating in alignment with what they are trying to accomplish. So people are motivated by their own aspirations and what they're trying to achieve, and not yours. And so if people are inspired by you at all, they're inspired by the why you're doing something, not the what you're doing or the how you're doing it. So we'll talk in a minute about, you know, how to flip this and turn it upside down. But I would say this right here is why, as I started implementing Bill Bachrach's values-based financial planning, I started going through the values conversation first, and clients started connecting with their values initially, and then they establish their goals, thereby making the connection between their values and their goals. They understand why themselves, why they're accomplishing all these goals. They're setting these goals to establish a platform from which they can launch themselves and experience their values. So if somebody wants to buy a vacation home, then, you know, maybe it's not because they love real estate. it's because perhaps they want to create a gathering place for all their children and grandchildren where they can be together as a family and love each other and be around each other. I don't know. The point is, a potential client making a connection between their goals and their values is that is the most inspiring thing to them. And that's why I believe values-based financial planning is superior, and it makes these brain connections with people. It works. But that's once you get in front of a client and start, you know, doing a financial roadmap is after you've had this conversation where they ask you what you do for a living. So we're going to back this up and say, okay, so if you're heading towards a meeting like a financial roadmap where you're going to sit down and you're going to determine whether there's good fit to move forward or not, then what precedes that? What's the conversation that explains what you do? Putting the why first, not the what, and not the how you do it. Okay? So before we get there, I want you to conduct your own little research on this. I did this in the early 2000s, and what I found was astounding. If you have any mental pushback on what I'm saying, go out and try this yourself. Try a little research study where you're interacting with people. It could be anybody that you interact with. It could be your neighbors at a backyard barbecue. It could be at a charitable organization that you volunteer at. It could be like the Chamber of Commerce, like I did it. Any interaction. It's basically for you to establish this little research study and just go through this little process with people and say these words. Try it exactly like this. Look them in the eye and just anybody and say, you know, it's funny. I'm in the financial services business, but the data is clear. There's a lot of research on this. Affluent people do not trust the financial services industry, and they do not like financial advisors. Just state it as a fact. Trust me, nobody will push back on you on this. Nobody will say, au contraire, I disagree. People love the financial services industry. People love financial advisors. You will never get that, not once. So just state it as a fact and then follow it up with this. Why do you think that is? And then just shut up and let them talk. What will happen is the person you're talking to will say something. They will state why they think people don't like financial advisors, and they will inadvertently, unbeknownst to them sometimes, they will be betraying their own thoughts. They will be handing you on a silver platter exactly what it is that they distrust or dislike about the financial services industry. And you will prove to yourself, you'll start learning the other side of our industry from a potential client standpoint, why it is that people are running from the room like they're escaping from a burning building when they hear that you're a financial advisor. I strongly encourage you to go out and do this. And by the way, if you're in this Advisor Pack monthly program, it's because you've made a decision to deliver comprehensive financial services to your clients at some point. You're trying to put it all together. You're trying to move in this direction. If you've made that decision, whatever they say, they could say, any of it, whatever they say. I mean, they could say, well, I think financial advisors are out for their own interests. I think they're out to feather their own nest. And, you know, you can never trust what they recommend because you never know whether they're recommending it because it benefits them or because it benefits the client. Whatever they say. Whatever they say, if you've made a decision to change that in your business, then you can respond after, you know, after you've asked them anything else, after you've got them to exhaust their mind of everything they think is why affluent people don't trust the financial services industry, you can end the whole little conversation by saying, you know, I think so too. That's why last year or whenever it was, I transformed our business model to change that, to address issues just like that, and to change the financial services model in this city. And that's that conversation. So I'm encouraging you to do this little experiment. So let's wrap up with the answer to the question. So I'm telling you that you need to change or think about changing the way that you describe what you do. Somebody says, so what you do, the typical advisor starts with what? So this is what the typical advisor does. They say, we help, and I'm just giving you an example. Somebody comes up to an advisor, this is what clients are running away from. The starting with the what. We help people get their financial houses in order and keep it that way forever. We do that by, and this is the how, what we do. This is the unique selling proposition. This is what financial advisors tend to love to do. It's the elevator speech. You know, we do that by employing a deliverables team of financial subject matter experts who create a financial plan for each and every one of our clients. And then the why. So if you're serious about your goals and you want a professional team overseeing your finances, hire us. So the typical advisor, and I'm talking about an advisor who has made the decision like you have to deliver comprehensive financial services through a team of experts like we're moving you towards doing, this is how you could incorrectly describe to someone what you do, how you do it, and why. This is the typical conversation. This is what clients are running away from. So don't do that. Let's flip it. And by the way, that what and how and why, that's in your world where you're moving towards, you know, comprehensive financial services. Imagine what this sounds like coming out of most financial advisors' mouths. You know, we help people, you know, the what? Well, we help people achieve their goals and, you know, fulfill their dreams financially. And how do we do that? We do that by representing some of the most premier investment and insurance products on the planet. We shop the market and we have access to the best money managers and the best insurance products that are available anywhere. And so if you are serious about your money, then, and you want the best, then you'll hire our team to implement your financial strategy. So, you know, I'm kind of winging it here, but I'm just saying, imagine this is the what, the how, the why, the way most financial advisors, you know, hypothetically might present what they do. And let's flip that. Let's turn it upside down. Let's say, start with the why. Now, I'm going to say something here, and I'm going to say this is along the lines of what I say. What I'm going to propose that you do, and the call to action, and the last thing I'm going to tell you is you need to decide what your why is. That it's not compelling, and it will not come across to the limbic brain, the feeling and the sensing, the part of the brain of the person on the other side who's trying to absorb what you're communicating. It will not sit well with them if you're using my why. If you're using reasons that are important to me, it's not going to be as compelling as if you sit down and take the time to establish what's your why. What is it that brings you into this business? But let's just walk through it. And this is along the lines of what I say. So somebody says, so what do you do? And I say, well, what our firm does is that we believe that financially, first of all, we work with financially successful people. We believe that financially successful people, and that is to say people who have things in their life that are more important than money, but they've achieved financial success, that those people should be well protected when they seek financial advice. So they should be able to delegate their financial affairs safely and without fear that things are going to go off track or that things are going to blow up. But that's not the case. So what our firm has done is we have taken charge of that in a very unique way. Our firm does this, making sure that clients are well protected by providing our clients with an oversight team, a team of skilled financial subject matter experts who hold our clients' financial advisors accountable to our clients' financial objectives. We work with our clients to establish clear objectives. Our team creates a strategy designed to work, and then I hold everyone on the team accountable to making course corrections that are necessary for you to stay on track. As a result, your financial house is in perfect order, on track to achieving your objectives, and there's a plan in place to keep it that way forever. So be an inspiring advisor. Start with the why. It's okay to come up with a unique selling proposition that describes the how. And the what, which is what most advisors start with, is the outcome. It's the result. So start with the why. So the question becomes, how are you going to establish your why? Well, first of all, complete your own financial roadmap. Read values-based financial planning. Go through the exercise in the book that Bill is doing for retail clients, but do it for yourself. Connect your own goals of your life. You know, what are your financial goals? Connect those with the values that matter most to you. Establish your why, starting with establishing your own financial roadmap. So if you buy a book, Values-Based Financial Planning, it will come with a financial roadmap inside. And the exercise is fully described. So my action item for you is to block time on your calendar. Establish your why. Block as many hours as you need to on your calendar over the next week and establish your why. Articulate your why first, and then what you do, the what and the how, that is just simply the proof of what you believe. And so that's my recommendation, my action item for you this month. And so with that, that's the monthly advisor packed session. We really enjoy working with you. And until next month, this is Mark Little. We wish you all the best in implementing.